Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Friday, April 26, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're at Chapter 2, page 23, and there is a solution, starting with the first paragraph. And it begins with, these observations would be academic. And today we're reading just that, through that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Kathleen O. for the 12 steps, AJ N. for the 12 traditions. The readers of our text are Don B., Julie E. B., and Pia S. Our newcomer reader today is Leslie M. And Leslie W., we got the double Leslies going here, will be giving our announcements today. So the share ID yesterday for Thursday, April 25th, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,828. That's 12828. And the share ID this morning for our Friday morning 7 a.m. time Eastern Time meeting is 12,830. That's 12830. OA Preemblem. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Kathleen O. to please read our 12 steps. Kathleen?
Good morning. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thanks for allowing me to do service.
Thank you, Kathleen, for your service. And now we'll hear from AJ N. on the 12 traditions. AJ?
Good morning, AJ N., compulsive eater in Ohio, recovered just for today. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I pass.
And thank you, AJN, for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And that includes, please don't use your mute button, but press star 1, please. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 23, paragraph 1. And comments will be on that one paragraph, and it starts with, these observations would be academic. And will Dawn B. please begin reading?
Good morning. This is Dawn B. from Southern California, a recovered compulsive overeater. And starting here on page 23. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of a man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Well, that's a fantastic paragraph. And it highlights an amazing thing that I learned when I went to a workshop put on by Harlan B. on the Big Book. And before that time, I had never heard of why I can't stop once I start. And what Harlan said is that I have an allergy. And I'd been around in program for decades, but never heard the fact that I had an allergy. And I have an allergy that sets in motion a terrible, terrible cycle that just as sure as gravity is going to have me be doing things I don't want to do. And what happens is when I take in certain alcoholic foods or when I participate in certain alcoholic behaviors, it triggers in my mind a allergy that I have no control over. And so once I take in those alcoholic foods or participate in those alcoholic behaviors, there is nothing, just as sure as gravity, I am going to be, there's going to be triggered a phenomenon of craving. And just as sure as gravity, I'm going to be eating more or excessively participating in these behaviors, and which involves things that are absolutely lethal to my body. And I will continue on that cycle. And the reason I do it is because of the buildup of normal human emotions that happen to all of us because we're human beings. We get sad, we feel anger, we have fear. And when these human emotions build up like a building of a balloon getting bigger and bigger and bigger, this causes an intense pain in my psyche, in my being. And my mind sees this as an emergency, this pain. And I have actually felt that I'm going to die unless I get my alcoholic foods. I'm going to die unless I get relief from this feeling. And so my being wants to fix it, wants to create relief from this intense pain. And the only relief that I know is that once I take in my binge foods, then for a few moments, I feel ease and comfort like no other. And for those few moments, all is well. And I get that relief. But then after those few seconds, sets in the horror and the remorse and the self-hate and this cycle of vicious self-talk and just disgusted nature that I have with myself after doing that. And then by that time, it's too late. I can't take it back because I've triggered the allergy and now I can't stop. And this is a horrific cycle. And I love the image of a person having a headache beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. I've done that for decades in my life.
Huh?
And if I can possibly do anything to help the next person coming along to not waste those decades beating themselves with that hammer, I would love to do that. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Dawn, for getting us started. Dawn B. So again, we're reading in Chapter 2, There is a Solution, starting with page 23, paragraph 1, and we're going to read from that paragraph only today, and comments will be on that paragraph. So who would like to share?
Linda
Roz
Asher.
G.
Okay, I heard Roz G.
Linda S.
Did I hear Linda
L-E-A-S.
S? I'm sorry, did I hear Linda S?
Yes.
Okay.
Julie E.B.
I heard Julie E.B. And I heard a voice in the back.
Yes.
It sounded like Allie.
Yes, Allie A.S.
Allie A.S. Okay.
Thank you.
Got to Allie. Got room
Susan
for two more.
Susan H.
Susan H. One more.
Melanie C.
Melanie C. Great lineup. Okay. All right. So, Roz G., please get us started.
Hi, Sherry KB. Good morning, everybody. This is Roz G., recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. The disease centers in my mind. And after I put down the food and my mind clears up, and I work diligently, and I put a lot of effort, and I sacrifice time to help others, and I'm truly living the program, it gives a way for my mind, for me to see what's happening in my mind. And through sitting in meditation, I get to just be there with my mind, me and God with my mind. And it's so true that the disease centers there. Everything else is secondary for me. And recently, I took a workshop. It was about a year, and I got deeply into steps 4 through 7 through 9. Well, now I haven't gotten into the 9th step too much, but I mean, I'm just saying as a repeat, I've done it before. But I really diligently got honest about me and my resentments and my fears, and I got to see what's happening in my mind. And I have some issues in my mind that need professional care. And due to the diligent work, I've gotten an opening to be able to work on this with a professional. And I'm so grateful for that, because the more my mind gets healed, the more I take care of it, the more I spend time with my mind, with God. You know, you can't touch the mind. It's something that's like, you can't touch it. It's spiritual. It's a spiritual sickness. And the more that I ask God to direct and come with me in here and hold hands with me, the more God shows me, okay, Roz, you've asked for this help. Here's what you need to work on. And I'm getting healthier and healthier. And people tell me, you know, things that, you know, I don't want to brag about myself, but what I'm saying is people tell me, and it shows through my relationships at work, through things that I hear, through my actions, and that my life is improving one day at a time, and I'm taking care of the mind. So that's where the disease centers. And like the lead chair said, it's the buildup. And so when I take care of those little things that happen every day, my mind gets cleaner and fresher. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Roz G. Linda S., you're up, followed by Julie E. B. Linda?
Hi, this is Linda S. from Wisconsin. I could really relate to this and with what the speaker was saying. I always look for instant relief from anxiety and when I'm upset. And this just happened the other day. I got upset over something, and immediately I went to my eating disorder behaviors. And it's automatic, and I'm still working on that. And I know from time and time again that it just makes me feel worse. You know, it'll feel better for just a few minutes, like that one girl said. But then I get the remorse and the self-hate and the negative self-talk. And that will last the whole day long until I call my sponsor or get out of my head. I need to learn to pause and pray to my higher power. And, you know, to work through the feelings, because the feelings are part of the disease. It's the negative self-talk. I have the disease fighting with my higher power, and I need to focus more on my higher power and positive self-talk. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Linda S. Julie E. B., you're up, followed by Aaliyah S. Julie?
Yeah, hi, this is Julie E. B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. Centers in my mind. What a great fantasy that once I get to the perfect weight, once I find the perfect diet or the perfect food plan or the perfect sponsor or the perfect Julie, that there would be no more disease. Or that my family, you know, everything's going perfectly with them. The disease centers in my mind. I have trouble tolerating life on life's terms. I have trouble tolerating not being God, not being the center of the universe, not being the one that gets to decide. I had this strange idea that if I were God, everything would work out better, that I could make things go for my children, for my husband, for the world. Everyone would see things my way. Life wouldn't be so complicated, so devastatingly fragile, and that I would not have this pain. But the disease centers in my mind, and from a very young age, I had an acute pain. I call it my nerves were on the outside, and life was just happening to me. And this was just a part of my reality. And it led me to be able to help people, and it led me to survive my childhood. But then it became that boomerang that Bill talks about. And so, yeah, I could go on a binge for any number of excuses. After all, as the big book says, the world and its people are often quite wrong. But we blame others and feel sore, or we blame ourselves, feel remorse, and feel sore. Either way, that's as far as most of us ever get. But today, we have a chance to put down the food and to get further. And every day, I have to become willing to both put down the food and to let God have me, good and bad, and see how I can be of service one day at a time. If you're still suffering, why not start today? All those excuses will always be there. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you, Julie E.B. and Aaliyah S. You're up, followed by Susan H. Aaliyah?
Yes, hello. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Hello, I'm Aaliyah S. from Cologne, Germany, and I'm a compulsive overeater and also alcoholic. I love this part. Just yesterday, I talked about it with my sponsor. No, this was the part I talked with my sponsor last week, but I really like that part because, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an apple, if it's a carrot, or if it's a piece of cake. The moment I take that addictive bite, everything just, you know, it just turns dark. For me, my really extreme addiction is like to isolate with media and food. And, you know, the last few days, I'm on day 16 of abstinence with a food plan. I was feeling turkey. Like I was, you know, I was feeling the pull of the disease. And when the disease starts to pull at me, it's like, you know, all clouds get dark and black and like everything around me gets dark. And it is like a real pain. And it's like, oh, and it keeps tugging at me. And it's real. It's, I don't like it. It's really uncomfortable. But it is what it is. It is like the withdrawal that I am having at the moment. And I'm glad that I know now, oh, it's withdrawal. I will get through this. If I just stick to the program, working with the big book, if I continuously go to the Vision for You meetings and keep and stick to my food plan and to my non-alcoholic foods. This meeting, it gives me so much strength, so much hope, and also the big book, and there is a solution, and I begin to see that now. But also, it was so important for me to go through this chapter and this text specifically, because if I'm honest and if I look back on all my binges, I don't know why. I really don't know why. It's really like, oh, I'm sad, so let's binge and get even sadder. It's crazy. It's pure insanity to do this, but I did it, and I'm just happy to be abstinent just for today. And yeah, I will keep working this program because this is the only thing I see helping me, and I'm really grateful for this meeting and for all you guys. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Aaliyah S. Susan H., you're followed by Melanie C. Susan? Susan H.?
Okay, I'm muted. Compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph because I think so many of us have related to this. You know, obviously, it centers in the mind. That's such instead of the body. That's so helpful to understand. And that, you know, if it was just the body and we were just told, hey, you know, I think of a friend who has cancer, and if she was told, hey, you can't eat these foods or you'll die, she'd say, okay, no problem, absolutely. But it's not that simple for us. It's in our mind. And I think, you know, so many of us who have relapsed know that feeling of, well, why did you start on the last bender? And all of us kind of know that, you know, we don't really know. That's the whole point of it, is that we don't really know. Why did we? And I think the point of this is that it doesn't really matter. The point is that our mind is just going to. It's always going to go back unless we have the 12 steps. So we're always going to be looking to go back to the food unless we have the 12 steps. And so it really just comes down to this one question is, were we working the steps? And if we weren't, then yeah, we're going to want to go back to the food. And that's all that matters. And if we don't, then it's going to be this visual of, you know, beating our head with a hammer and wondering why we feel the ache. I think so many of us relate to that. And then the, you know, folks asking us, okay, explain to us why, and us just laughing it off or becoming irritated and refusing to talk. That's just so relatable. And so it just really comes down to, are we working the steps? Are we in 10, 11, 12? If we're not, are we working the steps and working with a sponsor to work with the tools to get us to 10, 11, and 12 to make sure we can get there? And if those aren't happening, then absolutely we're going to be back in the food before we know it. And it really doesn't matter why. We can come up with a million excuses, but our mind will always find an excuse, always find a path. Thanks, that that'll pass.
Thank you, Susan H. And before we hear from Melanie C., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're in There is Solution, Chapter 2. We're on page 23, the first paragraph. These observations would be academic. We're going to comment on that one paragraph. And as soon as we hear from wonderful Melanie C., then we're going to take some more names. So get ready, everybody, because we'd love to hear from you. Melanie?
Hi, good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning, Sherry KB and all. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm in Wilsonville, Oregon. Grateful to be here. Boy, I've been just so swept up by the shares today. My heart is emotional. And I wanted to add just, you know, some of my perspective and my experience with this particular paragraph. One is, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting a terrible cycle in motion. Holy moly. I have lamented over that one, thinking, couldn't have known that at two. Picked up at about 2 years old, and my brain wasn't quite developed enough to understand that this would be academic. Some folks have. I suppose that this is true, and I try to identify in with it, but I'll tell you something. The twisted thinking was there at the very, very beginning as I look back, and I remember this wasn't necessarily with the food. I could talk about that sort of thing, but I can tell you that in grade four, I thought that I needed some more attention. I wasn't getting the attention that I needed. And so I went down to the corner where this wonderful oak tree, as majestic as it was standing with all this poison oak all up and down the tree. And I took that stuff and I rubbed it all over my body. And I was near death. I was absolutely near death. That's the kind of thinking that I continued to have with food and other things. And I sat home almost near death for many, 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 many days. And I binged and binged and binged and binged and binged my guts out over that whole situation in that time. The things that came into my head with, as far as twisted thinking is concerned, was things like, I'll start over again on Monday. God just made me this way. I like food more than most people do, so that's okay, and I don't need to do this anymore. And the other one was, I'm going to stop when I'm 25 because that's when life is going to get important. I'm going to really want to do some things, and I'll stop when I'm 25. And that's just a smattering of the things besides the poison oak business of where my twisted thinking went and how come I had to eat so much to stay drunk in my mind all the time, walking around in a brownout forever, forever and ever and ever, until that 25 slid into 50. I'm telling you, it slid into 50 with all its attendant darkness and the grip that it had on my body and the progression of disease when I found myself begging for help in these rooms. And I got what I needed from this particular standard of living. And I'm so grateful for that. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. So I'm just reminding everybody, we're on page 23, the first paragraph. Who would like to share?
Elaine B.
Did I hear Elaine B?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Lydia T.
Did I hear a Lydia?
Lydia T, yes.
Lydia T. And I heard O-H.
Bruce E.
I heard, was that a Kathy?
Patty.
Oh, Patty T. All right, Miss Patty T, we got you. And we got you, Bruce E. And we have one room for one more.
Jordan L.
I heard Jordan L. All right, so we have our lineup. Elaine B., Lydia T., Mo H., Patty T., Bruce E., and Jordan L. Elaine, come on in.
thank you very much. Thank you for your service. Yeah, boy, I can so relate to this. I'm so grateful there is a solution. And, you know, this book is not just written to alcoholics, but compulsive overeaters and many other things, but not just those that are suffering, but those that are suffering because of those that are suffering. And I love that it just helps people understand what is happening with your family members, loved ones, friends, everything. And so so our main problem is it centers in our mind. And, you know, where was my mind when I was carrying 100 extra pounds on my body for 20 years? I have a family member that was anorexic, one that was bulimic, and for me, I wore fat like a badge. You know, if you ask him why he started on The Last Bender, that's one of the things that we do here. You know, we keep asking why, because we want to smash home on our fellow compulsive overeaters that they have an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body once they pick up the bite, but the obsession of the mind is the thing that we really need to tackle and understand and really get. I heard one of the best descriptions of about this compulsion related to another program, cluttering. And basically the person told me that if you pick up a piece of paper and you move it 10 inches and put it down again, for a clutterer, that is like taking a bone out of a rabid dog's mouth. And I could so relate to that, especially when I went into this huge relapse after a good period of abstinence, trying to get through the steps. And boy, man, don't touch my food. And even today, if I find myself, I'm in that place, oh my gosh, I'm traveling, or, you know, something isn't going right, don't touch my food. It's like, oh, that is time to lean back into the only thing that will give me a daily reprieve from this this alcoholic thinking, so I don't have to become irritated and refuse to talk or take the actions that are needed. Because
gentle reminder.
Thank you. Because they work. They work. And I pass.
Thank you, Elaine B. And Lydia T., you're up, followed by Mo H. Lydia?
Hi, this is Lydia T., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Marquette, Michigan. The line that really stood out to me is, therefore, the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind. You know, I lived my whole life in my mind, and my mind, you know, told me lies all the time. And I remember something my sister said to me a few years ago. She said, oh my God, you just think about things way too much. And I was really puzzled because I thought, and that's a bad thing. Why? I thought everybody thought about things as much and to death as I did. And what I've learned in this program and through doing the steps is when I get out of my mind and I turn to doing the steps, helping somebody else, really trying to live my higher power's will. I'm trying to figure out what that is. I don't live in my mind anymore. And I just got done sharing with somebody a little while ago. I wake up every morning and I'm excited. And I don't really know why I'm excited. And I used to only be excited if I was going somewhere, if I was doing something, you know, had a big plan, we were going to go out to eat or a party or, you know, something of that nature would get me excited, going on a vacation, which usually was all about eating. Now I wake up and I'm excited every day. And I don't really know why, but I'm not going to think about it and try to figure it out.
Shut up, bitch. Shut up. The intruders are here.
Okay, then. That could be something that my mind would tell me.
Lydia, I think we lost you there. Lydia, star one to unmute, please. You still have about a minute. Lydia T., are you there? Can anybody hear me?
I can hear you, Sherry.
Oh, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, Sherry.
Thank you. Lydia, did you want to finish your share?
While we're waiting, can I have the page number, please?
Sure. Page 23, paragraph 1.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Lydia, if you want to come back on and finish your minute, that would be great. Thank you so much. And Mo H., you're up, followed by Patty T. Mo?
Yeah.
Oh, this is fun. Okay. Mo H., please go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. Mo H., recovered compulsive overeater in Walnut Creek, California. Thank you so much, Sherry KB, for your service and all those on the line, all those giving service today. Yes.
Shut up!
Okay. So I guess we're going to have to work through this one today. So the page before, there's a lot of things that jumped out at me that refer to this paragraph. You know, our behavior patterns vary. One drink means another debacle. We don't have any common sense or willpower. Never will be the full answer to these questions. We can't answer the riddle. And then at the bottom it says, once he takes any alcohol or food into his system, something happens, both bodily and mentally, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. And then we go on. These observations, so that's what they're talking about, would be academic and pointless if I never took that first bite, thereby setting that cycle in motion. And I heard it said, just before I take that first bite, I am stone cold sober. I am stone cold abstinent. But I could be crazy in my mind. I've been in the rooms a long, long time, and it wasn't until I got on these lines and started studying this book line by line that I really began to understand my disease, that I had a twofold disease. It was of my body and my mind. I never knew that. I just thought I liked food. I liked food. I liked to eat. And I had 65 pounds extra weight on my body for a long time. And it wasn't until I heard the twofold body and mind, and that I have to work with my mind every day. Every day. When I wake up in the morning, I need to connect to my higher power first thing, before I get out of the bed. I have to say, I say, good morning, God. Thank you, God, for this day. Connect all day long. That is my answer, is to be working this program very diligently, working with sponsees, going to meetings, carrying the message is really important to me these days, really important, and being of service to others. And so if I continue to do those actions, then the mind doesn't have time to get in there. I don't have to beat my head with a hammer. Because I don't have those thoughts, and I'm like the share before me that was saying, I wake up happy. I wake up excited about the day. And so, you know, just love all the shares. Love, love, love this meeting, and I will pass. Thank you, Sherry KB.
Thank you, Mo H. And Patty T., you're up, followed by Bruce E. Patty T.?
Hi, it's Patty T. from Southern California, recovered today by the grace of God. So great to be on this meeting this morning, you guys. Oh, my God, I've heard so much I can relate to. I'm pulled toward that last sentence in the paragraph. It says, if you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. That's what I did most of my life. In fact, all of my life. And I just would laugh it off. I would laugh off the fact that people made fun of me, people in my family, not people in the world. That I would laugh off the fact that I hated myself because I couldn't wear the clothes that all of the girls, my peers, were wearing. You know, I just laughed it off, or I hated myself. And if the subject came up, I would refuse to talk about it. I just would shut down. Because the fact of the matter is that the mind was orchestrating all of it, but I couldn't articulate it. I was like a two-year-old who couldn't find her words, even as a 51-year-old when I walked into these rooms. And even today, even in abstinence, when I am struggling with something, I don't even know what it is, and I begin to discuss it with a fellow or my sponsor, if they hit that truth, that wall comes up immediately. The gift, though, about today is that I see it. I see that panel come up in front of me. I see that go-to reaction to either laugh it off and ignore it or to simply refuse to look at it and discuss it. And then when I see that, I can go to God. I can write a letter to God. I can ask God to write me back. I can open up that portal, and I can admit, acknowledge, and discard. And that has been such a gift. And I'm doing that a lot lately. You know what? It's a little painful, but it's not nearly as painful as living in the disease. It's not nearly as painful as living an isolated existence with a pizza, you know, and having no other life. So thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
And thank you, Patty T. Bruce E., you're up, followed by Jordan L.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, everybody on the line. And, yeah, I want to comment on the last part of that first and then go back to the earlier part. But this really, all this hits home to me and all the shares too. But if somebody would have said to me, man, what are you eating so much for? And I'd have laughed it off. I'd say, yeah, I like to eat, man, it's cool. You know, I can eat all this and everything like that. But I'd have laughed it off. But then if the person would have continued to press me, I would have become irritable. And if they would have still pressed me, I wouldn't have talked to them. I'd just gotten out of there and wouldn't have talked about it, you know. And, yeah, well, did that a lot, didn't talk about it. So it would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink. Well, if I never took the first bite, I'd be in a whole lot better condition, wouldn't I? But the mind, it's in the mind. And my mind tells me, because of, like I heard earlier, all this built up of emotions, whether it's resentment or fear, whatever it is. Thank God we got this program to work through this. But the buildup of these emotions and the buildup of all this stuff, my mind tells me to just go ahead and have that first bite. You know, my mind tries to rescue me. My mind tries to help me and enable me. It's an enabler is what it is. My mind is an enabler. To tell me to go ahead and get some comfort and some peace and some serenity by going to that first bite. It doesn't say, I don't know, maybe it does, but I mean, I go to my higher power now a whole lot more, and, you know, but I don't remember my mind, certainly when I was in the disease and in the food, my mind wasn't telling me go to higher power, go to, you know, go to something spiritual, go to the phone. You know, I guess what it does is it tells me the easier, softer way. My mind does. Go to the food. You know, irritable, discontent, build up of emotions, go to the food. So I recognize that now. And I start out my day on a spiritual basis, try to, and praying and reading literature and meditating, this sort of thing, going on this call and talking to my sponsor and stuff like that. All this really, really helps. And when I get this buildup of emotions, I can write on it. You know, I get resentments, I can fears, I can write on it and share it with somebody in the fellowship.
That's a reminder.
So thank you very much, and appreciate everybody on the call. That's it. I pass.
And thank you, Bruce. Lucy. Jordan, now you're up, followed. We might have time for one more share. Jordan?
Good morning. This is Jordan Nell, a compulsive overeater recovered in Crested Butte, Colorado. Can you hear me okay?
Can, Jordan. Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure because I'm in a new place and phone service is not great.
There. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. So, my mind, right? I can't be trusted. That's what this paragraph is talking about, right? Which is kind of scary. Like, that's pretty terrifying for someone like me. I came into this program and, like, human intellectuality or intellectualism was, like, the end-all, be-all, the alpha, the omega. Like, if I could know it, then it was real. If I could understand it, then it was real, and that was, like, the most real thing I could depend on, right? So when I came in here and I was told that I couldn't, that my mind couldn't be trusted anymore, that I couldn't trust my thinking, that was like a big pill for me to swallow. And it was literally like I noticed it happening in early abstinence, to where like I would start thinking about something and it would start to spiral out of control, whether it was a resentment or fear or whatever situation I was in, it would start to spiral out of control. And I finally got to a point where I was like, okay, like this thinking cannot be trusted. It's not accurate. Like it is not real. And like really had to, I don't know, like almost train myself to let go of it, you know, to let go of my thinking. 'Cause it just can't be trusted, you know? So anyway, I guess that's all I had to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Jordanelle. And so we do have time for one more share. Who would like to jump in?
Deborah P.
Deborah, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Deborah P. in Northern California. Compulsive overeater, definitely compulsive overeater. Oh, my gosh. This paragraph describes me 150%. You know, if it was just the allergy, I could put it down and be done with it and go on with my life. But no, I have this brain, this crazy brain that just goes and tells me all of these lies. And that's the issue. Like, if I could just put the food down, it would be awesome. But I have this mind that just runs amok. It tells me I can eat things that I really shouldn't be eating. It tells me I'm no good. It just runs amok. It's just the other day I had what I call the committee in my head as soon as I woke up, and they were in the boardroom and they wouldn't leave, and I told them to leave and they just wouldn't leave, and it's just nonstop. And I'm so grateful that I don't have to be perfect to be in this program. I've spent my life trying to be perfect, and I've given that up. I don't have to be perfect. You know, I'm so grateful that that this program is loving and kind and welcoming, that we all have the same affliction, and we all have that crazy mind that tells us all this stuff, and that there is a solution. I'm just super grateful. This, like I said, this paragraph just really resonates with me. My mind will tell me all kinds of things, and I've been doing a lot of work, and there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming train. And again, I'm just grateful for this program. So thank you very much, Deborah, compulsive overeater. Thanks.
And thank you, Deborah P. Lydia T., did you come back on the line? Would you like to finish your share today? If not, we have about 1 minute left. Someone would like to jump in? 1 minute share? Going one.
Hi, this is Nirvana.
Nirvana?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead, please.
California.
1 minute. Thank you.
So thanks for all the shares and thanks for your service. I just wanted to say, isn't it funny how the mind remembers that few seconds of comfort but doesn't remember all the agony after it? So now I tell myself you've got two voices. One is the disease that's really loud. And the other softer one that I've muted for a while is the correct path. So now when I pause, I ask the softer voice, what do you say? Because now I know the disease voice. And the unfortunate thing is they both sound the same. They're both my voice. And so I just wanted to make that comment. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nirvana. All right. Wow, we're already at the end of our meeting. What a great meeting today. Great shares. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us today. I want to thank Team Friday for their service. Kathleen O. read the 12 steps. AJ N. read the 12 traditions. Rita Vera text today with Don B. Julie E. B. is going to take us out with page 164. And our newcomer greeter was Leslie M. And announcements will be by Leslie W. Let's see here. So now we're going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Julie E.B. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Julie?
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.